Welcome to the Hex Knight Podcast. I am still David.
And I'm Ivan. And today we are going to not indulge in nostalgia, maybe, but we're going to be practical about it. And we're going to talk about old games. Not so much like old play styles or any, but like literally old games. Playing games that aren't really around anymore. Maybe an older edition of something, or maybe a game that just has gone out of print. I suppose it could be an RPG or miniatures or boards or cards or whatever. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we're mostly here to talk about RPG stuff, I suppose.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, like, we're both people who are a bit older. We've seen games come and go, and, you know, a lot of things aren't around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess to start off and make it kind of just tangible, like, to talk about something like specific, what are some like older games that are of interest to you?
You know, I think the older games, they're of interest that have kind of passed hands, have certainly faded in relevance, like, are going to be one of my favorites to bring up is good old, you know, Rollmaster from the boys over at ICE. I mean, with the strength of 5th edition D&D, I can't imagine a game that would be, like, further removed from what the mainstream of gaming is doing right now.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, Rollmaster's almost like, and I say this out of love, but it almost, like, resents you for trying to play it. You know, like, the books are organized terribly. It's stuffy, it's dodgy, you have to, like, keep looking things up. There's 2 billion spells, of which 1 billion of them are, like, pointless and useless.
Yep.
It's a difficult game to like, and despite that, almost everyone who has played it feels, like, a lot of fondness for it.
Yeah. Good lord, this, like, I can only imagine there was a point when they were coming up with the spellcaster. It's like, you like D&D? You think it's cool to play a high-level spellcaster in D&D? Well, we're going to make you suffer horribly for like 10,000 hours before you can actually get a playable spellcaster in our game.
But at the end of it, if you eat enough shit, you get to cast level 50 spells. Suck on that, Gary Guy, guys. That's 7 times as much spell as in your stupid game.
Well, that's it's 7 times of everything or whatever, yeah, you know. Like,
you know, if you get a +5 sword in D&D, it's +25 in Rollmaster. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, totally. And it's going to describe how you, like, cut through someone's shoulder and, like, clip tendons and bleed them out mercilessly.
But that's kind of a good example, because it's something that's just, like you said, it's just completely removed from whether people are into, like, modern D&D or they're into, like, very, like, smooth, like, narrative, like, story-driven games. Like, it's just something that, like, there almost isn't a market for, you know? Like, most of the, like, rules, people who are into, like, hard rule stuff, they're more like, you know, like, Pathfinder is there for them if you want, like, lots of character options. And so that's an example of something that, yeah, like, even though you technically can, like, go buy books, but, you know, and there's been a new edition rumored for, like, I don't know, 10 years by now, and it's not happening. But, yeah, so it's an experience that just, like, yeah, it's very unique. It's very much of its time, and if you want that experience, you kind of have to go, like, yeah, you have to go, like, look for something like that.
It's the type that you got to be one of the people or know the people who have gotten bored with Dungeons & Dragons, not given up the hobby, but moved on to, like, find this crazy, it's like, hell
yeah, it's
yeah,
hard
I'm
to
in
find.
The
like, you're not going to find Rollmaster books, like, in a store, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen them at, like, Powell's in Portland, but that's, you know, they had everything there.
Right.
But that was, again, on the, like, old dusty stuff shelf. but, yeah, that's an excellent example. The one I'm going to bring up, and this is cheating a little bit because technically there's, like, a more modern version of the system, but it's the old West End game, Star Wars game, the D6-driven one.
Oh, no, totally, man. Like, that's the same thing. It was, like, earlier in gaming is like, oh, man, a Star Wars game. Like, I knew people that were super hyped when that was coming out.
Yeah, and, like, I'm not even much of a Star Wars fan. But back when it came out, this was the whatever the revised second edition, that was like the last of that game. Mm-hmm. When that came out, and a friend of mine had gotten the book, and he basically said, like, I'm going to let you have this book like for a month, and you're going to run a campaign for us. And so I did, and we had a great time. And like,
awesome.
We had a great time despite the fact I didn't really want to play Star Wars. But that, yeah, that was like a really, it was one of those, you know, at the time, big like story heavy games still was kind of a new thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a conventional game, like in a lot of ways. It was a dice pool. You added up like how many dice you had, you rolled them and tried to roll over. It had a couple of little flares with like dark side points, and there was some stuff like that. But it was very sort of like energetic, and it just so badly wanted you to be excited about playing Star Wars, and it worked.
Nice.
You know, it was just a fun adventure like kind of game. You know, it was before, I mean, at the time, like, because I think it was, it coincided with the, what are they called? The special editions of the original films.
Yeah.
So Star Wars was like bubbling up again. Like everyone was excited about it again. So it was right. Like just in the right time, but it was also just such a cool game. And again, like there's been Star Wars RPGs since, but they're all like much heavier, much more involved, more mechanically involved. Than just that little simple game that was just like one book and you can sit and play. You just need some six-sided dice and had a dude explaining to you like what fighting the Empire means. And,
so, nice.
Yeah, I think for me, while there's a lot of, I love old games, but that's one that really stands out as something that was like, where there isn't something like it. Because there's a lot of old games that obviously have like, new stuff has come out that kind of like sits in the same, in the same vibe. Like if you, you know, and, or have new additions that have, you know, been trucking along, you know, there's like 12 different RuneQuest versions out there. And,
right.
You know, so some stuff sticks around, but a lot of stuff. There was actually a game we've been trying to track it down, and a friend of mine, through like some illicit internet channels, almost found a copy, but it turned out to be a false alarm. There's a game called Eventyr i Vildmarken, an adventure in the wilderness. It's a, I think, the second Danish role-playing game to ever be published. It was probably, and I'm confident the game was garbage. It's one of those games that literally everyone remembers seeing at the school library and nobody's ever played. I remember seeing it at a school library and reading it, and I never played it. And I am desperate to find a copy of it again, because a couple of all the old Danish RPGs have surfaced. People have created scans of them with permission. But this is, like, there may only have been, like, a couple of hundred copies ever printed. It was, like, a tiny, you know, tiny thing. They may all have been sent to school libraries or, like, public libraries. And at some point, you know, like, they will bin books. So just, like, finding a copy may not even be possible, let alone, you know, digitizing it or like preserving it, you know.
Right.
So that's one. And again, like, I'm sure the game is garbage. There's a reason nobody ever says they played it. But I urgently want to like find it. But that's a good question, right? Like, if you find, let's say you get your mind on like an old game, you read about it, you find, you see a thread on Reddit or on RPGNet, people that talk about this old game, you're like, holy shit, that sounds really cool. I want to.
Yeah.
You know, like, problem number one you're going to run into is, how do you find the books for like a 30-year-old game? How do you find what you need? Like, if you're lucky, you can get PDFs, you know, like on DriveThru or something. You know, like, there's a lot of like weird old stuff that does get a PDF release now, you know, whoever has the rights, like, digitize it. Or I suspect a lot of times they are probably just like finding the best pirate PDF that's been floating around on the internet, and they're just grabbing that and putting it up for sale.
Nintendo has done that though, right?
Oh yeah, there's been some stories with some of the, like, they're obviously just like hacked ROMs that have been out on the market. So, you know, but it's hard to argue, like, okay, they do own the games. I guess they can do whatever the fuck.
Yeah, but it's just kind of funny how, you know, and it makes sense. Like, you got like a decent sized inventory of books that have taken up space for a decade. And it's like, it's all got to go. No one cares. I'm tired of looking at it.
Right.
You know, it's being recycled tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, 10 years later.
Right. Suddenly there's like an audience that like wants this because they decided, you know, they all played it when they were kids. Like, oh, we should. Like, what do you do? Well, some asshole on the internet like cut that book up and put it in his scanner, and now he can get it for $9.99 on drive through. And if you're lucky, some mega nerd will put together a new edition of it.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm kidding.
So, and a lot of times, like, and it's also, especially with old stuff, if you're not sure if you're going to use it, like, a PDF is pretty, like, you know, it's not going to junk up your bookshelf all that much.
Right.
Do you ever go on eBay to look for old game stuff?
Yeah. I mean, the thing with, like, eBay is all about, the words right on the edge of my, like, speculation. I always feel like... Like, yeah, it's there, but the person is going to edge up that price a little bit to, you know, get people to be like, oh, you know. To
I've seen old, like, PlayStation 1 JRPGs go for, like, $80, $90,
mm-hmm.
Which is bananas because that's more money in, like, today money than they cost at the time.
Yep.
You know. Yeah, so with eBay, you can get lucky sometimes. Like, me and a friend mm-hmm. of mine were buying up books for a Hornmaster, and we found it must have been an estate sale or something, because it was just a huge collection that was being liquidated for, like, very... Just, like, book prices, not, like, collector prices.
Oh, nice.
So we were able to grab some really cool stuff in, like, nice condition. And it was one... It felt... On one hand, it felt a little weird, because, like, this was obviously someone's collection. Like, it was in nice condition. There was all of this stuff. Like, this had obviously, like, been important to somebody. But at the same time, it was like, okay, like, I'd rather, like, it goes to me who's going to use it in a game. And I did.
Oh, totally.
You know, than some asshole who's going to, like, triple the price and just turn around and sell it on eBay, you know. Like,
yeah. So what's the status of Harn these days?
The status is complicated, but it's still technically alive. The story goes that at some point, Crosby, who was the original writer, the dudes at Columbia Games basically end up disagreeing on the direction of the game.
Sure.
So he, like, wandered off, and it was never, like, fully, I think, resolved in court for a few years. So they basically both had the rights to the name, or at least they had enough of the right that nobody wanted to, like, fight it out in court.
Yeah.
So Columbia would go on to create Hornmaster 3, which is the sort of main, most well-known edition. And then Crosby would go on to make the, like, super nerd version, which is Hornmaster Gold. And they kind of coexisted. And after a while, I think they sort of sorted out their problems. So it still exists separately, with the idea being that Columbia Games publishes material for the island of Harn. That's, like, the corner of the world that it's named after.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other company... publishes material for, like, the rest of the setting, so they don't overlap.
Wow.
So you can get all this setting stuff that's, because it's all, like, very rules, like, free, and it's all, like, really cool, but it's kind of weird, because, yeah, there's, like, these two different versions of the game.
Right, kind of like the Mythic books and RuneQuest.
Yeah, like, holy shit, we could do, like, a whole episode, like...
God, yeah.
The parentage of RuneQuest. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing where, like, you can get, like, the RuneQuest that isn't RuneQuest, and you can get the RuneQuest that is RuneQuest. And they are kind of compatible, but not really. And yeah.
Craziness.
IP stuff gets bananas fast. But yeah, to return to the eBay thing, I think it's one of those things we also just, like, have to be lucky. Like, right. Sometimes you can find, like, some really cool stuff, and it's like nobody has noticed the auction. So you, like, put in a bid that you've, you know, like, I'm willing to pay $20 for this book. Right. And then you get lucky, like, nobody spotted it. And sometimes you just get, like, burned out. Last night I was bidding on some, like, old Warhammer stuff on eBay, and those auctions got noticed, like, immediately. And,
of course. Just,
like, I was like, okay, for 10 old minis, I'm willing to pay $50. And it burned over that, like, I think it sold for, like, 78 or something.
Wow.
Which is... Yeah, like, old miniatures is tricky because a lot of times they will go for, like, high prices because there is... So that's part of it. Like, some of it is just straight-up speculation, you know. Especially, like, old D&D stuff, a lot gets resold for just stupid money.
Right, right.
Like, and a lot of that wasn't rare. Like, there were millions and millions of, like, AD&D player's handbooks. That shit is not worth $50. You know, but also some of it, especially for like old Warhammer stuff, there is what's called the old Hammer community. And it's a lot of dudes who are like, you know, they'll buy up like old miniatures they owned or old stuff they always wanted. It's like retro computer guys. And then they'll paint them up and you know, and they're real collectors. They're into this stuff because they're, you know, they're interested in it. They want to strip like bad paint jobs off old minis, repaint them, you know, like they're the kind of people you want to have this stuff. But also because there is kind of a big community of those dudes, and they're also like dudes who are like, a lot of those are like, you know, they're older dudes. They have disposable income from their boomer job.
Right.
So, you know, they can, they don't think, like, if they can find like the one space marine they had as a kid and they can get like a fun weekend painting him, that's, they'll drop, you know, $20 on that dude.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, a lot better than going to the movie theater these days.
No, exactly. You know, and you have something you can put on your shelf and you can tinker with and you can even play a game. So it just means like for stuff like that, where there is a active audience, like the price is going to climb up automatically. But again, like that's more organic than people like, I know in like the retro video game community, there's a lot of big disputes about like people who get into it for speculation, you know, they're just trying to drive up the pricing or like straight up like manipulating pricing, like wash trading and stuff. So especially like old Nintendo stuff, that's like the big thing. But yeah, so you can, I think you sometimes have to get lucky a little bit. Sometimes you can, if there's a community for a game, because some games are just dead, you know. But if there's a community, sometimes you can like get somebody who will sell you books for like an okay price. Like I've sold off like old Warhammer stuff to people who were looking to play and, you know, sold it for like a decent price for the time.
Sure. So well, you had that conversation and kind of lectured them a bit, like, look, here's the deal.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and I've had that on the receiving end too. There was a guy a long time ago I bought some Space Marines from, some specific figures from like an old box set. And I asked him if he mentioned he had some like some of the orcs from the same set. And I was like, oh, like if you want to part with those, I'd love to grab those too. And he asked me like what I was going to do with them. I said, well, I'm looking to play the game with my kid. And he's like, okay, you can have them for free then.
Oh, you know, sick. So,
yeah, just, you know, it was just one of those moments, like, because it was going to get played and not, like, flipped on eBay, he was just willing to. So I try to, like, interact in the same way when I'm getting rid of stuff.
Right.
You know. I mean, nowadays we also have, at least if you're stateside, you have Noble Knight Games, which is both, like, really cool and, like, a lot of people will complain about them, too.
So, I don't know. I got my Rollmaster books through them. What are the complaints? I thought
okay. So if you're buying stuff, Noble Knight is great, with one exception. So I will say they tend to price kind of on the high end. On the flip side, I've never had a book from them. If they say a book is like okay quality, that's like what some asshole on eBay would call like great quality,
right?
Like their stuff is graded to be very. They're very fair with it, and I have never got stuff from them that was worse than what I thought it was going to be. It's almost always been better. So I bought from them a lot, and I will buy from them a lot. The complaint is the same as with a lot of like video game resellers, where they don't pay all that well for used books. They do, however, make it really, really easy. I recently got rid of a whole bunch of books, and rather than try to do it on eBay, you got to get stuck with stuff and you're going to have to go to the post office like 100 times.
Right.
I sent a list to them. They sent me back like, we'll pay X dollars for this, which was, so it was one of those, like, if I could sell everything in the stack, it would have been worth maybe and 30% more. Let's say that. Sure. However, I would also have been stuck with like a quarter of the books that nobody wants.
Yeah.
You know, because some of it is just junk. So them saying, okay, we're just going to give you like this amount for the whole bunch. We're going to send you like FedEx labels. All you got to do is like put it in a box and take your fat ass to FedEx. And that was totally worth it. So if you're looking to get money for like old stuff that's actually valuable, Noble Knight will lowball you because they are a reseller. They are in the market to get your stuff for like an okay price and sell it for like okay plus 10. Right.
Right. Right. They have to.
Yeah. Like that's just how the business is. And people will have different opinions on that. That's what it is. So I wouldn't like get super riled about that. But as far as like buying games, absolutely. Like they are really cool. I buy again, because the quality is going to be like not garbage. Like if they say it's okay quality, it's going to be at least okay. And it's probably going to be like really, really nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay is going to be not collectible, but totally usable without, you'll never worry about missing pages or like huge coffee stains or, you know.
Yeah, like
badly damaged, but go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, like if they say it's fair quality, that usually just means like it has shelf wear or like, you know, like it's obviously, it looks like a 30-year-old book, but like compared to like eBay where it might have like penis drawings on every page, you know, like, yeah, so Noble Knight is absolutely, and there's other options if you're elsewhere. We're both stateside, so Noble Knight is, you know, convenient for us. There's, you know, like a lot of, most towns, like in Portland, you know, there's, what's it called? Guardian Games?
Right.
Always have a decent selection of like random, like a lot of game stores have like a used game section. And often for really cheap prices, like if you go to the local shop, you can get stuff much cheaper.
Right.
If you're in Europe, I know Alpha Spill in Sweden is a huge reseller of used games. Again, not like super cheap because you're paying Swedish prices, but they have a lot of stuff. And it's European Union friendly shipping if you don't want to deal with Brexit.
Yeah. So. Sure. But man, like, I'm always intrigued by the Scandinavian gaming scene that's, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of its own little localized cultural thing, you know, that's.
Yeah, it's very much a different, I think it's what it benefited from, kind of as a tangent, is that you had a lot of people who were like, you had kind of like the perfect audience for it. Cause you had like, you know, like a lot of, an economic situation where like you have a lot of teenagers who don't really need to have jobs and they have time on their hands. They are likely to speak pretty good English and are like, you know, like a high educational standard. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of like government like interest in that kind of stuff. You know, like there was a Danish Viking RPG that like got government funding because it was meant as an educational game.
Right.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of things that cost. There was just a big like fertile ground for that kind of thing. So.
And no satanic panic.
No, there was a little bit of a panic with like Vampire the Masquerade, I remember. Mm. But yeah, I remember we heard, and there was one book about the like the kid that committed suicide that did get a translation in Danish, and but we never really like heard anything about it.
Mm.
So yeah, it was just that kind of. I remember there were some. There's a YouTube video from an old talk show where they're talking about like. They have like a dude and like a bit, you know, boring looking dude in a suit who's talking about how these newfangled role playing games and how like kids can't tell the difference between like reality and the game anymore. Oh, they go talk to what they're hoping are like some dumbass teenagers. And like the one who's talking is just like, he's cool as a cucumber because he's like, well, you know, there's probably a lot of people who can't tell that like orcs and dragons aren't real, but we can. You know, he's just like a cool motherfucker. You can tell he just. Was waiting for his moment to be on TV. So we got a little bit of that, but not like, not to the same extent. It makes me wonder actually how many like D&D books in particular, like got like burned or thrown in the bin or something, you know, like I've talked to people, in the States who had like their books taken away and, you know, thrown out or,
oh man,
you know, so some percentage of like, however many millions of D&D books were printed probably did go that way.
Right.
Gary Gygax said in interviews that their sales went up during that period because I guess he's got all the like cool kids in leather jackets like wanting to get books now.
Yeah, totally.
Or just kids sneaking out and like buying replacements and like hiding them. So, you know.
Good for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like any like scandal, like bad publicity is still publicity.
Right.
I was going to say, so to sort of thread back on topic a little bit, one of the issues, and you kind of touched on it with Rollmaster, is like getting people like interested or invested, right?
Right.
Like,
that's a huge deal.
Yeah, like it's a deal with a game that's like, you know, flashy and modern, but a lot of old games like don't look all that nice. You know, like even if they have nice art, there it's just a different, you know, a lot of times you're looking at like black and white line art or like, you know, kind of like pencil art almost. Yep. They definitely look like they were done on a typewriter. You know, even like old GURP stuff, which is laid out very efficiently, but it doesn't look very appealing.
Right.
And then, you know, like you can't, okay, so to play this game, you need this book and this book, and you have to get both of those from eBay if you can find them. That's kind of a tall challenge, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The rarer the game is, the more tough it will be to, like, maybe you'll get a player guide and a game master guide, but like the spellcasters kind of source book is gone or something.
Yeah, if it's a game that's like broken up or like there's a separate monster book and, you know.
Yeah,
like
yep.
That can make it like way more difficult. If it's a one book game, it's a little easier. I think it also depends on, you almost need like one of two things. You need either a group who's like generally like interested in trying weird shit. Like if you tell
like
them,
me.
Right. You know, if you tell people like, I found a cool game about playing like Stone Age Wizards in Finland. Like, oh shit, let's play it. This how do I roll a dude? Like, okay, so first you have to roll 48. Or you have to have a group who doesn't give a shit about the game. They just show up to, or the system, they just show up to play the game.
Right.
You just run whatever is the case. If you have one of those two cases, you can play your weird game nobody has ever heard of. Or you get like one dude. I think if it's like an earlier version of a game, it's probably easier.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. You know, like it's easy enough to rope people into playing like old D&D if they play the current one. Because like, okay, you'll get all the rules might be different, but you'll still get like all the basics. Like a fighter is still a fighter, you know.
They still use the same dice pretty much.
Yeah. So stuff like that, you know, like you could move between like RuneQuest versions and still have a basic idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
You're not going to be totally out there.
Right.
Man,
I'm still sitting on my Mean Chronicles book.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be like, it's a heavy game. We're actually going to start with my online group. We're going to start Mutant Chronicles. But we're relevant to the conversation, actually, because I'm going to be running the sort of original Swedish version, which is a BRP-driven, so it's percentage rolls.
No kidding.
So, yeah, it's weird, but we just got done playing Call of Cthulhu, so it was like a natural, like, okay, we'll just, you know, everyone knows how to roll percentages and hit locations. We'll just keep going with that.
But... Man, the art in the original Target books do not hold up, and people are like asking me about that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to either love it or you have to like just grit your teeth, right? I was sitting and flipping through because I was trying to find like something I could hand out. It's like, okay, here's like three pages that explains the setting. I was looking at the art. It's like 25% of this is so good.
Yeah.
The parts that aren't those 25% is often not. Because you'll see something that, like, you see, like, the Imperial, like, trench soldier stuff. They just look badass, like, gas masks and helmets and stuff. And then you see some just, like, fucking roided up, like, 80s dude with, like, buzz cut hair. And, you know, there's, like, a ninja with, like, giant tits and a megasword. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, the WWF vibes just scream at you if you aren't.
Yeah, like just mega muscles and fucking like you can see the veins. And yeah, it's a vibe, and it's kind of hard to like you bring that and you say like, okay, so this is like a gritty like low tech cyberpunk game about corporate like warfare, and like, okay, but can I play that dude with the giant fucking head?
Right, and someone's going to walk in the sessions like, all right, brothers,
I'm the you're going to get like fucking Mr. T, like impersonator, somebody who talks like the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like that's what's going to, yeah. So that's a hard sell, you know.
Or someone's going to do something like that just to be obnoxious. That's part of the vibe.
You have to just embrace it. Go all out, you know, let everyone play a ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in that case, like having too much art Maybe you're better off sometimes with one of those old books that has like two drawings in the entire book, because then it won't, like, you know, spoil your preconceived notions.
For a lot of new players or younger folks that are used to awesome digital art, like, you get some old D&D book with some like crooked-eyed sketch that someone just needed to throw in there to have something.
Yeah,
there.
It was obviously done by like somebody's nephew.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Rifts.
Some of the rifts are, again, is pretty good, but a lot of it is, well, it's there. There's a box game I have on the shelf. I haven't run it, and I probably never will. I owned a copy, I sold it, and I bought another copy, and I was giving it away, called Powers and Perils. It was published by Avalon Hill when they were trying to get in on this whole RPG thing. Mm. And it's one of those games that, like, you sit and page through it, and, like, you can see how there's a bunch of cool ideas, but they're all just, like, done bad. So it has, like, this whole skill system that covers, like, everything you need to do, and it has, like, this stuff about, like, oh, like, some of the skills are, like, professions. So if you have, like, if you're a forester, you can do all these things, and you have a chance of them. But it's all, like, stupidly overcomplicated.
Yeah.
Or it has, like, oh, combat is, like, you know, attacks and parries and counterattacks and partial hits and stuff, but it's all, like, really chunky and difficult to get through. And just every single thing about the game is just, like, more convoluted, more steps and more math than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And the entire book has, like, maybe 10 pictures in it and across, like, 4 booklets.
Whoa.
So it is just, like, tables and tables and tables, like, tables for days. And it's just, like, they couldn't have made this game, like, look less appealing if they had tried. And on top of that, like, and I expect this must have been an expensive game because it came like a big box. But then, like, the books are not, like, they just have, like, paper binding. Like, they're just stapled, like, paper booklets.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's just weird. And I can tell nobody, like, gives a shit about this game because, like, I think 10 years ago, I bought a copy for $20 on eBay, and it was basically, like, pristine condition. Probably never got played. And I sold it for $20 because that was fair. And then, like, 2 years ago, I was like, you know what? I should make a challenge. I should run this fucking game just as somebody did. And I went on eBay, like, after 8 years of inflation and speculation, the game was still $20 in a box. And the copy I got was basically pristine condition. It may have been the exact one. So nobody has played that. If you're a Powers and Perils player, like, let us know.
Yeah.
I want to hear what happened to you.
Well, like, how do you make this game work? What do you think about that? Like, how do you deal with a situation where you're stoked to get this obscure game and you're going through the rules and it's like...
And then turns out to be shit.
Right.
I think you have to either... I think what you can do, this is, so I sat down with a kid one day, I shanghaied him, and we went through rolling up a character, and then we, like, set up, like, he got in a fight with some dude, so we rolled out the fight, and then we rolled some random treasure, so we found, like, a tent and, like, a sword that was too small. And that was our adventure. So we kind of worked through, like, okay, this is, like, super stupid and tedious, but it worked.
Right.
But that almost, like, made it more, like, okay, if it basically works, but it's just, like, dreary. So the problem is you have to have some sort of hook that, like, ties you into it. Like, a lot of the, like, White Wolf games have kind of clunky and awkward rules, but nobody gave a shit because the settings were so cool. And you got to play a fucking vampire. But, you know, like, that's hard when it's, like, playing, like, Fantasy Swordman number 3. Nobody gets that excited about that. Like,
totally.
Yeah, like, I would put up with a lot of bullshit if I could play a vampire that can throw cars at people. I'm not going to put up with that much bullshit to play, you know, Bronan the Barbarian.
Right, number 10,562.
Yeah, and because it's an old game, you know you're not going to get to do Conan shit. You're just going to be, like, an asshole with 8 hit points.
Right.
So...
Dungeon fodder.
Yeah, exactly. It's like all these fucking games that come out, and they all talk about how they're based on Appendix N, which is, like, you know, Gary Gygax's list of, like, Conan and Elric and all this stuff, all the books that he read. The problem is those games all start you off as, like, a fucking nobody in a dungeon. But none of those books, like, Conan wasn't a fucking nobody. He would wipe out, like, whole, like, mobs of dudes. Exactly. Elric summons demons and, like, fucking lays waste. Like, let me play those dudes. You know? Maybe that's... That's why we need Wushu, but...
Right.
Yeah, I think you have to, like, piece out, like, what made this game cool. And you have to kind of, like, grab onto it. And maybe a little more so. Because, again, like, a lot of... Not that old games are automatically worse, because a lot were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, standards were just different. And a lot of cases, a lot of these games, especially if it was, like, a small press game, like, it may not have been played by anybody before it was released.
Mm, yeah.
You know, like, they didn't have massive playtesting teams going through this stuff. So you're kind of going to have to, like, do some legwork yourself.
Right.
Well,
I mean, the benefit of that is, like, if you got a pretty good grasp of what the system is trying to do, there's no one that's going to hassle you about house ruling a bunch of shit and, like, throwing a bunch of options away.
Yeah, nobody's going to get mad about your Powers and Perils, like, house rule collection, you know? And also, like, if you know, I was going to bring this up, actually, because I think the fact that there are, you know, A, what books are out there, and B, that no more are coming. And that can be a limitation, but I think it's also, like, a big advantage. Like, you could do, if there were four books published for the game, if you have those four, you have all of it. Anything you do from here on out is up to you, you know?
It's canon.
Right. Like, yeah, canon, because we have one setting book and one adventure that ever got made. So, you know, like, even if you decide you want to stick 100% to what's in the books, because that's how you roll, there's only four of them or whatever. So you have a lot. Like, if there's a country on the map that never got discussed in a book, there's never going to be a case where you've been running an adventure and then a book comes out and says, like, oh, yeah, like, this place is, like, full of lava. You know, like, that's never going to happen because
there
are no more books. So I think in a way that could be very, like, I don't know, empowering.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a relief, you know, you can just do whatever you want to do and not worry about it.
But there's something about refreshing about even if the book's kind of a pain in the rear to navigate and like kind of order in your own mind, or at least for me, it can be like that. But like just getting into the mentality of the game and playing from a different perspective than what you've been doing, you know, with like modern games or even video games. Just having that experience from that time can be really cool.
Yeah, kind of like immersing yourself in like what went into this game. What does it want you to do? And I think in a way, like looking back on a game can make, like we talked about, like Advanced Fighting Fantasy, you know, that's a perfect example of that, where like it wants you to go about things in a very particular way. And I think sometimes like looking back at it makes that easier. Because we just have, you know, like we have the advantage of like history. We can look at games that have come out and we can look at other things like board games and card games and stuff and just have more of an understanding than people would have had at the time.
Right.
You know, so you can go back and look and say, okay, like I think what happens a lot, and this happened a lot like in the 90s where people like you would have a game come out and people would like kind of, you wanted to use it for everything. You know, it's like the guy who has written his cool like D&D version of like playing Transformers. That is, you know, it's shit, but it works. And I think now like people, there's more understanding of the idea that like, okay, like we could just like have a Transformers game and therefore we could focus on when we play this game, we can focus on like what makes it work real well.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, like you don't have to be the guy like, you could only afford like a Shadowrun book when you were a kid. So everything got played with Shadowrun.
Right.
You know, so you can look at like what's Shadowrun like good at doing and we can play it that way. We can create a campaign that is specifically about those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having some distance to it and the fact that you do kind of have some perspective on it, I think that can be really, really strong, especially if you're trying to look like for me, I think like I'm big on like trying to experience like old things and weird stuff. I'll watch like weird old movies, you know, because I want to just see what it's like. And if you're trying to do, I don't know if it's like gaming archaeology, that sounds stupid, but like if you're trying to like immerse yourself a little bit in it, that's a really cool and like rewarding thing to do, you know? And if you want to just use it as a baseline and just make up your own shit, you know? Like, if the game had, there was never, like, a setting book. You just have, like, what's in the rule book, then make your own.
Totally.
So I think that's, it's funny because in a way you don't need that. Like you could buy, you know, the new RuneQuest book and just make your own world that is called Blue Rantha instead. And you can do whatever. But there, I think a lot of people are hesitant to do that because there's this nagging idea that like, A, like it's not real, quote. And B, like there's going to be some stuff coming out for this game and I'm not going to be able to use it because we're not playing in Glow Rantha. We're playing in the one where all the characters are like elephants.
Sure.
So maybe like, I don't know. Like I've, even though it's rationally dumb, like I find myself getting kind of hesitant with it, you know?
Mm.
So,
well, I mean, that's one thing that I like about older game systems is they were more geared towards creating a platform for player creativity.
Yeah, I think the idea that the games could be about like very specific things is, especially like for like 80s stuff and 70s stuff, that was not so much a thing. Like you were definitely meant to like kind of roll your own, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it took place like in a specific world, but it was still kind of like, okay, you're the GM, you obviously have this under control kind of vibe, you know? and sometimes we didn't because we were just dumbass kids.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, with a lot of newer games, there's definitely this vibe like, okay, this is meant to play like this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also it's something to kind of like rediscover a little bit is like not worrying too much.
Mm.
You know, like don't sweat all the details. Don't sweat if you get it exactly right. You know, just kind of like go with it and see, you know, sit down, make your game. You know how to run a campaign. Like put some monsters in a place, put some characters. Here's the rules. Here's how they work. And let's just see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because that's how, that is what you would have to have done back then, right? Like you couldn't, if you were lucky, you could ask like your older brother or whatever.
Yeah, there's not like a community of YouTube influencers that's like totally analyzing the game backwards and forwards.
Right, you know, and even to more much more basic level, like if you want to, if you're sitting, you're a kid and you've like heard of this D&D thing and you decide that sounds fun, but I don't really know what to do. You can click on a button and you can go see some people playing fucking D&D. Like you can sit and watch how it works, what they do. And it may not be exactly how you want to do it. That doesn't matter. But like that was just not a thing, you know, like you had to read the thing in the book that so told you how to play. And then like try to figure that out with your like dumb shit friends. You know? You know, like, and like simple things like somebody getting mad that like it doesn't say in the rule book you can do like a certain thing and you would have to fight over it, like, you know, like that's just not a thing anymore. Like, because you can just go look. It's a good thing, you know, like it's better now, but it's hard to sometimes set aside all the baggage we have and like go back and say, okay, what would people actually have, you know, like when this game was being made, what did people expect?
Well, from that perspective of like people having to like totally freely interpret with no backup, like I would imagine people totally misunderstand how a game's rules work and they just essentially are like house ruling all over the place for years. And then the light bulb goes off and they're like, I'm going to make my own game. And they're working, you know, off those like broken premises they developed just with their friends. Well, and then they make a bad game.
Yeah, there's a term for that. I forget which writer came up with it called the heartbreaker. basically the definition is like a dude who comes out and he's got like the game that's going to solve all the problems in role-playing games, and it, when you read it, it turns out the last game he played was Advanced Dungeons and Dragons and he's just has seen nothing ever since. So like it'll advertise, you know, like, oh, this is so much better than classes because this has skills and, you know, like we have a magic point system which solves the problem and our alignment system is way better, and everyone is looking at it and going like, okay, that's cool, but we've been playing Savage Worlds for like a decade, man. Like, you know, and the reason they're called heartbreakers is because these games will, they're almost always like labors of love and intense, like, you know, people put work into it. And they almost always have like some really cool thing. It's just buried in like somebody's like, you know, AD&D house rules, basically.
Yeah, they've just been stuck in their little neighborhood. And that happens in like music and all sorts of art forms. Like they're with their five friends and they never like poke their head up or out to see what the heck is going on. And they create right. like, reams of stuff. And then they're like, I am a genius. And then everyone else is like, what are you yeah. doing?
it's just like a Reaper's like poisoned riff or something. you know, like it turns out nobody listens to hair metal in 2021. Who would have known? You know? And that's the thing where it's like if it's completely earnest, it's almost like makes you hurt a little bit, you know. Like,
right.
Like there was stuff happening. Did you just think like people gave up on that whole thing? you know, I always wonder like how many groups out there are just like they have their set of like old worn as fuck like Redbox D&D books. And they just like, you know, twice a year or whatever, they get together and play their old campaign. And they just like the entirety of the hobby is just like passed it by.
Man, you know, in a sense that that's really great. Like the look, yeah. keeping something like that going, you know, mm-hmm. and they've got their own lore that they've built up. But it's yeah, never like, going to get past where they're at.
Right, right. It's just like locked in time in a way, you know. yeah, it's weird, you know. But it's like I said, you have to like almost, and I don't want to like overthink it, but you almost have to like decide like what's your goal with playing an old game. Like, are you trying to like kind of recreate like you know what it was like and take the game like at its face value like that, or are you going back with like modern eyes and saying, okay, here's kind of like what this game would be great for. Let's do that. You know. Mm. Like, how do you, you know?
But yeah, like, for me, like, I would just go back to, like, have that experience or try to, like, make yeah. people use graph paper and notebook paper for their character sheets, you know, and just.
Yeah, just, like, embrace all of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and I think it's also, like, it's going all in, you know, like. We never like wanted to take stuff out of. It's funny because people always talk about like games for kids should be simple, and that's bullshit. Like kids want like that shit to be fucking complicated because then they feel cool playing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all old fat dudes like us who want it to be simple. like if you take a bunch of teenagers, like there's a reason like the current edition of Warhammer 40K, if you have all the army books, it's like a fucking 8,000 pages. You know, because they're into that stuff. They want to know that this unit and this unit, when they're exactly this distance apart, they get a reroll to this thing when shooting at this particular type of target. Like, they're into that. You know, like, don't make simple games with them.
Yeah, that's a huge misconception. Like,
I think so. Unless you talk about, like, literal kids, you know. In that case, you right. have to, like, but this almost more about, like, patience and stuff than it is about, like, process.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, but good Lord, like, I dug into the FAFSA Battletech books like no one's business. And yeah, you presented to me cold nowadays,
I think a lot of people panic. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's just like it's unappealing and like it's feels kind of hostile. you know, so yeah, I think there's definitely and it's funny because a lot of times there's this vibe that old games were simple, and that's not always the case.
No,
you have like Redbox D&D, which is really simple to play and very fun. But, you know, like even like RuneQuest, which is not a super complex game, but it still has some weight to it. You know, even right. the original version, there's a bit there, like figuring out like the encumbrance of your armor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Rollmaster is kind of the heavy, you know, and even old games like old Warhammer 40K was not complex, but it wasn't simple either. Like there was a fair amount of moving parts. Battletech was, you know, a bit of a beast. So yeah, I think a lot of the, like the OSR dudes want to like lay claim to the idea that old school was about like these simple like make stuff up games, and that wasn't really always the case. Like somebody was buying all those AD&D books with the fucking grappling tables and stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and the atrocious organization.
Yeah, you know, you have to, like, page through the Dungeon Master Guide to find, like, the one thing. Initiative rules are split over, like, four different chapters of the book, and nobody can correlate them all anyway. there used to be this document on, I think, Dragon's Foot, where they had tried to write out the canonical first edition AD&D initiative rules, and it's like, it was, like, 8 pages of shit. Like, nobody uses all this bullshit. We all try it, you know, but... Yeah, so it's like
it's said, a weird... no playtesting.
Yeah, like they, you know that shit. Maybe one or two individual pieces. They were probably written by like different authors anyway. Mm. So it just got thrown in the book and we'll throw it out because they assume, you know, the GM is going to figure it out.
Right.
I guess the beginning of all the Rolemaster books, it always have this thing, at least in the companion books, of like, yeah, like your GM will tell you like which of these options are like in your game. Mm. You know, it's just like, fuck off if you're the player. Like, he has a Viking hat, he gets to decide, right? So,
but I think for maybe part of the reason why we're doing this episode, because like the OSR thing has become pretty ubiquitous.
Yeah, it's almost become like its own institution.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so now you have people who are like trying to wrest like different meaning out of it after it wrested meaning out of, you know, it becomes, it's like anything else. When there's a movement at some point, it like solidifies and it becomes an institution, and then you get the next breed of like rebels coming up. And you know, and there was for a while, there was this idea, like I said, of the OSR people kind of like laying claim to old school gaming in ways that just wasn't genuine, outside of like very specific ways of playing D&D. But it's difficult too, like back on like Google Plus, rest in peace, I had tried to open a like a community for specifically for talking about old RPGs. I think I set the limits like 1985. So it was before 85, it would fit.
Wow.
It was arbitrary, but you have to throw the dart somewhere. I would have said just before Vampire now, I think, but it doesn't matter. But the idea was that you could talk about old RPGs that weren't Dungeons & Dragons. And a bunch of people joined and said how great an idea it was. And then nobody wanted to talk about anything. Because it turned out that like the dude who was there to talk about Traveler had nothing to say to the dude who was there to talk about Pendragon, who didn't care about somebody's RuneQuest game, who didn't. So it just ended up being like, you know, like you have to have almost like a specific community for like a specific game.
Sure.
Because then you can get like 20 dudes together who want to talk about like old Traveler or whatever. So I think like outside of your gaming group, I think it can be difficult to like get a community or build a community.
Mm.
And maybe, but maybe, I don't know, like if I'm being philosophical, maybe like these sort of nostalgic trips are also kind of like about not worrying about the internet and the internet community.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like just kind of like indulge in something like, and like, you know, all nerds are hipsters without fail. So being able to roll up and say like, oh yeah, I just finished my Powers and Perils campaign. It was very enlightening. You know, like if you play some shit nobody has, if they have to ask what the game is, like that's like an extra nerd point, right?
Yes.
It's like when two metal dudes beat each other and you start listing off like the most obscure band you each know, and you keep like listing bands off until you hit open one you both of you have heard. So you get to like name drop all the like bullshit like North Russian like black metal you listen to that nobody gives a shit about. You don't either. Until you finally like both settle on that, like, yeah, we've both heard a Biohazard album before. That's, you know, that's a meeting point.
That's funny.
Yeah. Man,
Traveler is always a really cool game. Like I'm the one guy who's open to all sorts of stuff to like, let's see what happens. But where are the Traveler communities? Like, it's well, so really Traveler cool is game, actually, man.
Yeah, Traveler is actually doing kind of well. Mongoose has had the license for like 1,000 years, I guess. And I think they're on like a second edition. It's going like really strong because they did it kind of the right way. They touched up like some of the mechanics a little bit. Hmm. So there's like a consistent way to like resolve skills and stuff, and it's easy to use. But it's still like you could take like old Traveler characters and kind of still use them. Just like change like one or two skills that get work. And there's a bunch of stuff. Like, I think for a while there was like a Judge Dredd book for it. And they've done a bunch of like offsetting books for it. So you can kind of use it like as just a generic sci-fi game, which it was always meant for, but it never did.
Right.
So yeah, Traveler is actually like in a pretty strong place. There's a spin-off, a fan spin-off called Cepheus, which is like a slimmed down, simpler version of it that is really good. And I keep meaning, I feel really bad because the guy who like created it is like a fan of stuff I've written. So I feel really bad that I've never like sat down and read through all of that. But from what I've been told, Cepheus is like really cool if you want like a slightly simpler, more streamlined version of Traveler.
Awesome.
So go look that up. But yeah, like, it's also a weird time, like, right now, because, like, nostalgia is just, like, hot shit. So, like, all kinds of stuff gets, like, pulled back up and, like, out of the swamps, you know? You know, like, we talked about Advanced Fighting Fantasy, like, a bit ago. That's, you know, like, super retro. That's, like, mega nostalgia for a lot of, like, British folks. So, and that has, like, a sprawling and, you know, we concluded, like, actually quite good edition. You know, I've run a short game of it, and it was really fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Steve Jackson Games put out a mobile version, like a mobile video game based off the original kind of choose your own adventure style books. So it was, I think, did pretty darn well too.
Yeah, there's a ton of nostalgia for that stuff as well. Like the Lone Wolf book series is getting like fancy, like hardcover reprints.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like, there's just a lot of that stuff. It is a lot of, you know, if you were 10 years old in like 1990, this is about, you know, then today you're 40-ish and you probably have some disposable income and a vague wish to like recapture your own to fend off the feelings of impending dread every time you like stand up and your back hurts,
right
you know, like, I mean, it doesn't have to be that dire, but I think there's just a lot of people who are like you know, they want to like recapture some of those things, and sometimes we get like modernized versions of them.
Yeah, you that's know, great. So.
Yeah, it is. I mean, even video games have had it with, like, you know, the for a while it got a little, like, too much. But, like, there were so many of the, what's it called? You know, like, platformers are huge again. Like,
yeah.
There was, like, a stretch of, like, what, like, 20 years you just couldn't buy a platformer. You know, now they're a thing again. They're a legitimate, like, indie genre. You know, you even see, like, occasionally, like, from big studios, they'll do, like, a weird little side project. Like, the new Metroid game is a side-scrolling platformer.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, like, it's apparently, like, really good, too.
Cool.
You know, like, all kinds of, like, retro and pixel-looking games. Retro shooters have come back, you know. I don't know if all these projects, like, make money. But they're projects people cared about and were excited about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, good Lord, like, Kickstarter single-handedly, I think, brought back isometric RPGs.
Oh, yeah, and, like, point-and-click adventures have been, like, my wife just played through, I forget the name of it, but it was, like, you know, it was on the Switch, but it was in the style of, like, old-school, like, hand-drawn, like, adventure games. Like, there's all these things that, like, they have audiences who are, like, hungry for them, but they were just for, like, for so long, they were just not, like, they're not really, like, viable on, like, a AAA budget.
Right, right.
So, so yeah, like, in a lot of ways, we've talked about it before, that, like, if you disregard, like, the plague and Brexit and shipping being bad, like, it's kind of like the best time, like, it's been to be a gamer, because we have all the cool shit from like every decade, but we also have all the cool shit that's happening now,
right?
And like, I think sometimes people get like hung up on like, oh, you see, like, you get like grouchy old groks who are like, oh, you know, they hate everything that came out after like 1983 or whatever, like, like, get the fuck out, you know, lighten up a little. There's so much like cool shit out there, and all the cool shit that you remember, guess what? That's out there too. It's probably on drive-thru.
Right, right.
You know, like, you can play your old school like Pendragon game, or you can check out the new one, or you can check out some, you know, weird indie game, or like, just, there's so much of it. Yeah, I guess that's like my concluding point, I think, is like, there's almost no reason not to. Like, you can go check out, like, I find a lot of fascination. I don't tend to, while I'm prone to nostalgia, not so much for RPGs, maybe. I find RPGs that I never experienced is, like, that's the stuff that gets me to, like, my eyes go wider and I get excited and reach for my wallet. Mm. You know, like, I don't know, something about, like, the idea that, like, you know, we all have the games we played when we were teenagers and we got started. But, right. Like, there's, you know, like, this other timeline where that's not the game you started with. It was this one, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just, like, super fascinating to me. I want to, like, imagine. I want to sit and look through the book and I imagine, like, you know, like, I said before, like, if I found Rifts, like, when I was a kid, like, that shit would have, like, blown my mind. I would have shit myself. You know, because it was just too awesome. You know, and somebody else, you know, like, there's some dude right now, you know, like, I've introduced like Lone Wolf to people and it's blown their mind. They would have been super into it if they had found it when they were kids.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, yeah. So for me, a lot of it is really, it's like nostalgia for things you didn't have nostalgia for.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't, there, I'm sure there's like a psychological term for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, right. But yeah.
But I mean, for me, like, I think being a teenager and getting Rifts like hot off the shelf and experiencing, like, realizing as a teenager that this game is freaking broken.
I mean, like, from there, like, it's all up from there, right?
Well, yeah, like, I'll say, like, that gave me a healthy cynicism towards, like, all games, and in a sense, it opens me up to try, like, to just not stay in a lane, because...
Yeah, I think it's also, like, it's both, like, being more realistic with it, like, okay, these guys are not professionals, they're just making it up, so... but I think it's also like realizing that, like, yeah, we still had fun with that.
Oh yeah. If, yeah.
You know, it's like when people are saying, like, oh, it doesn't matter what game you play. Like, any GM can make a game good. And that's true to a point.
But I think, like, I'll set that as a takeaway. Like, the game itself does matter, and that's why it's cool and interesting to try out more obscure and older systems, because they can open up totally different and new ideas. Like, like the simple thing with Traveler of, like, having the profession kind of tracks and having characters that die while you're making them. Like, yeah, that's cool. Like,
it's a gamble, you know, like, do I want to push for another skill so I can maybe get a ship? Like, all right, that's cool, but your dude just got spaced, you know? So, we had, one time we were playing Traveler with, my wife and a friend of ours, and we were sitting in the park, and we were going to roll up characters. And my wife rolled through; she got like a merchant or something, a little decent set of skills. And the other player, I think after five dead characters, we just declared that, like, I was going to give you some skills. We were going to play, because she just couldn't roll up a character that could make it through, like, at all. it was just one of those moments. You can't explain that without having, like, been there, I guess.
Right.
You know, because it's just so weird and so alien. But yeah, so awesome. I think the takeaways are, like, go try some, we do this a lot, but yeah, go try some, like, old weird shit. And, like, think about, like, what was out there, like, you know, what can you find? And it's not, in this case, it's not really about, like, because we've talked about, like, old school styles before, but
yeah,
it doesn't have to be like that. You can bring, like... Like, if you're not into, you know, like, super confrontational, like, hard GM, like, play, you don't have to do that. Like, you can take your style, you know, you can take your ideas and your, however, like, your group likes to play, you can take that with you. But, you know, but frame it in a different light. What does it mean to pick up, like, a hard simulation, like, fantasy game that's old, but play it in a group that's very, like, you know, they want to play, like, a very cooperative and story heavy game. Like, how does that work? You know?
Right. Right.
So, yeah, that's, I think, my takeaway. And,
that's a good one, man. Yeah. Like, it's just breaking it, not being caught up in, I don't know. Like, everyone's got their thing, and people, some people just love honing in, and they got their way to do it.
Yeah, it has to be, like, exact, you know?
Right, right, right. That, you know, like, you do you, and if you're having fun with 5th edition, great. Like, do your thing. But, man, like, there's a big world out there, and, like...
There's a big world you never, like, knew existed, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like... Yeah, go prowl around that. Even just, like, read through some of the stuff. You don't have to, like, start a campaign, you know. Just,
Yeah, totally.
It's always good to, like, understand the roots, you know.
For sure.
And maybe, like, even if you come away from it going, like, man, that was a bunch of bullshit and I can't understand, you know, you still learn something that you can bring back to your table.
Yeah. Like, right.
There's value in knowing what you don't want. So...
And a lot of, like, this older stuff is, it's like 10 or 20 bucks. Like, that's, you know.
Yeah, if you find something. Movie. Yeah, exactly. Like, if it's not something that speculators have, like, fucked the price of.
Right.
You're not out that much money. And a lot of games didn't have, like, huge runs of supplements. You know, like, if you're looking at, like, the original Mutant Chronicles RPG, if you want to. Like, I think there were, like, 6 books and, like, 3 adventure books. And that was, like, that's more than a lot of games got.
Yeah.
You know, like, there is a lot of games that got, like, two or three books ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, you could, if you're into collecting, you, there are a lot of games that are pretty attractive to collect for, because you can finish a collection, you can have the whole thing, you know.
Da-da-da.
So.
But yeah, yeah. They're like, more people try Mutant Chronicles. It's over, sorely overlooked, and it's really cool.
It is really cool. Maybe we need to do, like, an episode talking about the history of it. And
yeah.
So, but yeah, so that's, I think, the takeaways we have. And I think we've rambled on for a while. So let's go ahead and round this one up. I hope everyone is, it's almost Christmas, and by the time we have another episode, it will definitely have been Christmas. I hope everyone got some sick gaming loot in their stockings and everything.
Heck yeah.
So don't glue your new Space Marines to your face. So that makes them difficult to deploy.
Right. Be careful about stepping on dice, of course, and letting cats and young children eat them. And
yeah, you know, that's many. Gaming can be a hazardous hobby. Our mothers were right. They were just didn't know how they were right. We weren't going to go crazy. We're just going to get maimed. You know, who thought it was a good idea to market a hobby that involves like glue, sharp dice, and scalpels to like fucking teenagers?
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Ivan's got cool stuff on War Games Vault.
Yeah.
Nordic Weasel Games. Yeah.
Go have a look. You might even find some. It's not that old, but you know, you didn't know it existed.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're a cool Canadian Dave, in which case you've been cheerleading it for a while. And hey, man, do it all for you.
Yep.
And with that, I guess, happy Christmas.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everyone.